Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Buffalo Beat, everyone. My name is Joe Biscaglia. Thanks for joining us on another episode in the quiet period of the NFL calendar year. It's really the only quiet period there is. That little brief getaway between the end of minicamp and the start of training camp, which usually winds up being like 4 or 5 weeks. For the Bills, they ended their mini camp on June 17th, and they'll be getting back into gear on July 24th for their first practice. I think they're reporting on the 23rd to St. John Fisher College. But we are here kind of taking the temperature on the season, maybe some expectations, how things stack up this year. And joining me, as always, is my trusty co-host, Matthew Fairburn, our Sabres writer over at The Athletic. And Matthew, I know this NFL dead period hits a little different for you now because it's the not so dead period for hockey writers, but the dead period all the same because you know there's not much going on football wise.
Yeah, it is pretty. It's the one time of year that the NFL allows things to be relatively slow. Doesn't happen often these days. It seems like this gets shrunk down more and more every year. And even this one feels like it's going to be about a month, you know, like minicamp ended last week and then they start training camp a little bit earlier this year. And I think if ever there was a season for things to get going as quickly as possible for the sake of the fans, this is the one because I think people have been ready for them to start playing football again since the moment the season ended. So in that respect, it's a good thing. And it's one of those seasons that's potentially, you know, it's going to start early, you know, with training camp starting, you know, quick and the season starting as early as it can start with the season opener, you know, being Bills Rams, and could potentially be a longer season, you know, than Bills fans have been accustomed to prior to the Sean McDermott era. So it'll be, people got to take this down period and really, you know, get some good R&R in because they got to gird their loins for what could be a long one.
You really hit us with gird their loins 3 minutes into the show.
Well, it's the dead period. We got to keep things lively.
All right. on that note, the Bills are obviously facing a season with very lofty expectations, and some of the results from the fan survey that we ran over at The Athletic pretty much show that everyone's on the same page here, where I think from 2000, I did some like double up questions, and from 2021 to 2022, like I left the same question of, do you think the Bills have what it takes to win the Super Bowl? In 2021, 86% of people said yes, and still getting responses to this year's, but the people who say yes are at around 99% at the moment. So I think everyone's kind of on the same page this year as to what it could be, but absolutely time to recharge the batteries because it's not, you know, it could be, but it likely isn't going to be all roses once the actual regular season gets here, because there's always some inevitable adversity that hits, whether it be a loss that you don't expect or an injury that really kind of pushes how the team might how might the team operate. So there are inevitable things. And really this offseason, I think, just kind of stoked the fire even more, because the way that last season ended, it was almost, it could have really gone one or two ways. Like, if the Bills just kind of coasted this offseason and kind of did the same thing as they did last offseason and run things back and not have as much turnover, especially as they did on the defensive line this offseason, then I think fans might have felt a little more stagnant and a little more anxious about what this year would look like. But they added so many new pieces, highlighted by Von Miller. They got rid of some of the players that had represented their first 3 years in the playoff journey, like Cole Beasley, like Star Latulele, and John Feliciano. Daryl Williams was there for a couple of years. So they got rid of those guys and really made it a little bit fresher. And I think that's helped the excitement heading into the season. But the one question that still kind of hovers over is this team good enough to get through the AFC? Because they have yet to do that. The Chiefs have stood in their way in the playoffs two times. The rest of the AFC has just kind of gone bonkers with how much they've added throughout the offseason. And it seems like the AFC is the league to beat heading into this year, even though the Rams were just the team that won it all this past season. So the question kind of presents itself, like, okay, in terms of conference, division, who makes it the toughest on the Bills in 2022? There's an obvious answer, but it became less obvious because of some of the moves that the Chiefs, made this offseason. So what about you, Matt? What do you think heading into this year? Who kind of poses the biggest threat? Dare I say outside of the Chiefs, but we'll just lump the Chiefs in there for now.
Yeah, I'm sure if you pose this question to Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, every year they say the same thing, where everything starts in the division, right? If you don't take care of business in the division, then, you know, you make life a lot harder on yourself. In our latest power rankings at The Athletic, which is a good composite, of feelings of our NFL writing staff, the Bills were number one after the draft in the power rankings. The next closest team in the division was the Patriots at 17, the Dolphins were 19, and the Jets were 24. So I think, I'm guessing, and this was after the Tyreek Hill trade. So that's a pretty big gap. You know, I think that shows why the Bills are among the heaviest favorites to win their division of any team in the NFL. I think did the division get tougher over the offseason? Probably as a whole.
It got deeper,
yeah. But did the immediate threat, are the Patriots more of a threat in 2022 than they were in 2021? I think that's an interesting question. I think the answer is very unclear. The answer depends big time on Mac Jones and the type of step that he and the rest of the offense are able to take without Josh McDaniels calling plays. And, otherwise things are pretty status quo on offense. The offensive line lost a couple of pieces, but, I think they didn't feel all that dangerous this time a year ago either. And then all of a sudden midseason, they looked a little bit scary. And by the end of the year, things had really fallen off. So, the Patriots, I would say, are a wild card, but I don't think you can definitively say they're more of a threat now than they were at the end of last season. The Dolphins are, but the Bills have so thoroughly owned the Dolphins that it doesn't feel like until Tua, until you figure out what they have at quarterback, that you can call them a legitimate threat. And I think the Jets are still figuring things out. So it's almost like the Patriots in 2019, where sure, the rest of the division was giving it the old college try and the Bills were making a jump, but still the Patriots had everybody at an arm's length. I feel like the Bills are in that spot. Even if Mac Jones takes a jump, I still think the Patriots are probably the biggest threat. I don't really buy the Dolphins as a threat to the Bills because of how well the Bills have matched up with them. And the Bills really seem to have the Patriots number at the end of the year as well. Certainly, you know, Bill Belichick always will probably provoke a little bit of anxiety around these parts as long as he's around and make it feel like the Patriots have some semblance of a threat. But it does feel like when you're worrying about, you know, certainly the team is going to be focused on the division first, but I think everybody else, your eyes go to the rest of the conference. And Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs have been the roadblock for this Bills group. And they have gotten probably not, you know, better, but they still have Patrick Mahomes. They still have a lot of pieces, mm-hmm. even losing Tyreek Hill. What that's going to look like, you know, is a big, you know, a big factor in how the conference is going to shake out. What I find interesting about the AFC is that the top dog probably got knocked down a peg, that being, you know, the Chiefs. You know, they lost to the Bengals. How equipped are the Bengals to get right back to where they were? The Bills are right there in the mix. Those are probably your top three teams, but it's the next tier that got a lot stronger. You've got the Chargers really loaded up. The Broncos went and got Russell Wilson. You know, the Ravens are still hanging out, you know, as a team that has a lot of talent, has been in the playoffs multiple times. And then
they've got Lamar on a contract year, and that's going to be a scary thing for the AFC, I think.
Yeah, and they haven't shown, Lamar Jackson in particular hasn't shown, you know, the ability to go deep into the postseason yet, but that, you know, that could be coming. And they've got, you know, they've still got so many pieces in place that make them a tough out. And then you kind of have that upstart group of, you know, the Raiders, the Colts. You could probably lump the Titans in there as a more proven team, but I think they took a bit of a step back this offseason. But that group of teams that was hanging around the fringe of the playoffs and, you know, kind of, you know, finding their way, probably is that next threat of maybe a team emerges from that group to be a legitimate contender. But I would think it's Ravens, Broncos, Chargers, Bengals, Chiefs, Bills as kind of that score to beat, you know, with the Bills comfortably being in that top tier with the Chiefs and the Bengals.
Yeah, I think with the division, it should be a pretty the Bills should be able to handle their business and at least win four, if not five or six games within the division. I do really like what the Jets did this offseason, and not just the draft. I think they've built intelligently. They're going about things without taking like crazy shortcuts. They know where they are in their build, and they're hoping that Zach Wilson makes a pretty good jump in his second year. And it looked like down the stretch of the season, he started to get it a little bit more as opposed to early on. Like, the Jets were a mess when Zach Wilson got thrown out there to start things. And yeah, I think he learned from that a little bit, but still it wasn't like, from an efficiency perspective, what you would like to see from your rookie quarterback. But they're at least entrusting him and thinking that he could make the jump. And, you know, he's got some natural talent, and they're hoping that with guys like Garrett Wilson and Elijah Moore and Corey Davis, they just went out and got CJ Uzoma on a pretty, you know, good contract as tight ends go. They've been trying to improve their offensive line. They've been building up through their defensive line. Like, they've been doing a lot of intelligent things. So I think there's a chance that they can get to third in the AFC East, which we haven't been able to say about them like for a while. They've just been a mess.
They look like the 2019 Bills in some ways.
Yeah, yeah.
But probably without quite the defense, but maybe it comes together in a certain way. But how they're trying to build the offense reminds me of where the Bills were heading into Josh Allen's second year.
For sure.
But he was more promising as a rookie, I think, than Zach Wilson was.
Yeah.
But
we also watched it closer, too.
True. Yeah. Probably colored my opinion to see Zach Wilson try to go against Bill Belichick twice. You know, rookie quarterbacks against Bill Belichick, historically, the stats are just awful. So there was part of that. I do find the rest of the division to be pretty interesting because the Bills look like they're comfortably going to win it. It would be a pretty big surprise, but given all the questions at quarterback the other teams have, it's hard to see one of them really threatening the Bills unless there's an injury situation that we can't foresee. And how the rest of it, like when you mentioned, oh, the Jets could jump up to third, I could definitely see that, but it's a question of who finishes fourth at that point. You know, that might be the more interesting question than who wins the division because, you know, could the Patriots backslide? Possibly.
I think they could.
You know, it's hard to envision, you know, even at their worst, them backsliding all the way to the bottom, but the other teams have improved. I think, you know, of the quarterbacks in the division, not named Josh Allen, I think Mac Jones inspires the most confidence at this point. Zach Wilson probably is the most, you know, intriguing. Like the upside of Zach Wilson might be the biggest threat to the Bills long term. Short term, I feel like Mac Jones is the one who can get his team in a position to be competitive with the Bills. It's the reason why I think if somebody backslides to the bottom, it might be Miami, even though they have added all this speed on offense. They've got Tyreek Hill.
God, that would be a mess.
Their quarterback,
if they did after they did that.
I mean, their quarterback situation is just not great at the moment. And so we'll see. I think how that all shakes out will be interesting, but it might be one of those things that the Bills are just sitting back and watching it all unfold as, you know, those teams are figuring out who's the worst among them, because unless the Patriots have something up their sleeve and unless Mac Jones really, you know, takes another big jump in his development, that to me looks like, you know, the only real threat. I mean, we may look back in a few months and say, wow, we should have seen, you know, we should have seen Tua coming, you know, this development that he was going to make now that he had talent around him, or, you know, wow, Zach Wilson made a jump nobody was expecting. But the Bills have comfortably the best quarterback situation, and that is where everything starts and stops. Look at all the teams that we mentioned as the biggest threats, and you're talking about the teams that have those quarterbacks who can strike fear into an opponent. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes, the Bengals with Joe Burrow, the Chargers with Justin Herbert, the Ravens, the Broncos, you know, those are the teams. And then the next tier, the teams that you have questions about are the teams that you're not quite sure what they're going to get. Are the Colts going to get the version of Matt Ryan that can take them deep into the playoffs? Is Derek Carr enough for the Raiders? You know, even with Devontae Adams, is Derek Carr that guy? I mean, the Browns have, you know, the most uncertain of quarterback situations at the moment, situation of their own doing. The Titans with Ryan Tannehill, and then all those AFC East teams are probably right there. You know, the Patriots, Dolphins, and Jets with just quarterback situations that aren't slam dunks. And the Bills are in that position in the conference where they have an absolute slam dunk at that spot, and then, you know, that gives them a clear edge over so many teams right away.
I'm with you. The conversation doesn't really begin with the AFC East because there's a pretty good, well, not a pretty good, but a legitimate chance that the Bills will be the only team heading to the playoffs from that division this year, which would be quite a story in itself that the Patriots have fallen after making the playoffs and the Dolphins not making the leap. And, you know, maybe the Jets not making a jump forward. The Dolphins strike me as, you know, them trying to help Tua find his inner Jimmy G by, you know, surrounding him with good playmakers and all this other stuff. And, you know, maybe focusing on the run game a little bit more. They hired McDaniel and he is he's someone that is intriguing based on coming from where he came from, the Shanahan school, and there's going to be a lot of carryover. They have about 75 running backs back there that all have some experience that it seems like they're going to be doing the same thing as the 49ers always do with their running backs. So yeah, the Dolphins at the very least will be interesting to see how they develop Tua under this new offense, and hopefully for their sake not post any more deep balls on Twitter, so that way he doesn't get ridiculed by everybody. But the rest of the AFC, the team that everyone kind of points to that isn't the Chiefs, where it's like, all right, watch out for this team, it almost feels like it always comes back to the LA Chargers. Just because of Justin Herbert and how exciting a player he is. They had really a lot of cap space to try and exploit this rookie window like the Bills did with Josh Allen, and you know that the Chargers have currently with Justin Herbert. I mean, look at who they've added this offseason. Khalil Mack. They went back and re-signed Mike Williams to run it back almost completely on offense. They've revamped their offensive line. They still have Austin Eckler. They feel like they're getting close on defense with like a fully healthy Derwin James, and they've drafted well on that side of the ball too. So it feels like a lot of the conversation comes back to someone from the AFC West. And if, like I said, if it's not the Chiefs, the Chargers seem to be the one that, or the Bengals, the Chiefs, if it's not the Chiefs or the Bengals, because the Bengals obviously just went to the Super Bowl, the Chargers are kind of like the chic pick this year to make it all the way. And sometimes those fall flat on their face in a year where everyone expects them to be great, when they haven't done it before. But the Bills made that jump, from 2019 to 2020. And so, you know, I can certainly see Herbert and the Chargers doing the same.
Yeah, there's a lack of playoff experience there quarterback that it almost felt like they had a playoff game, you know, with that end of season game against the Raiders. It probably had a similar feel, you know, to what a wild card game would feel like. But it's still not quite the same thing now. That didn't stop Joe Burrow from running through the conference, you know, mm-hmm. a year ago. So I don't totally count that as a huge knock against Herbert and the Chargers. They have felt like a chic pick for, I don't know, most of my life. It feels like they've been the chic pick, you know.
That's
like
fair.
Even throughout the Philip Rivers era, it was always popular to, you know, now this is a completely different version of the Chargers that maybe they can get it done in those important moments. And I do feel like, as opposed to the Raiders or the Broncos, you know, they've got a head coach who, you know, they all have experience together and they've been growing together for a couple of years. McDaniels has head coaching experience, so that should, you know, be something that should help the Raiders. Nathaniel Hackett's going to be figuring it out as a first-time guy with a new quarterback, you know, that could take some time. So I understand the deserved excitement around what the Chargers have built, the talent that they have. That division is just going to be crazy competitive, it feels like. There won't be any games that'll be easy in that group. And, you know, it could benefit those teams by the end of the year. It could hurt them. You know, they could be beating each other up and playing some really competitive games all year. So I'm curious to see. I think everybody will be watching that division really closely. It's probably the most interesting division in football. And I think if you're the Bills, you're all right with being in the position. Think about the position New England was in for so many years in a lousy AFC East, not having to deal with that type of regular season gauntlet in the division. I think that's an okay position to be in. It may not last very long. You know, Mac Jones and Zach Wilson could get better and make the AFC East look a lot tougher in a year or two. But while it's in the position that it's in, it's not a bad thing for the Bills at all.
Yeah. I my brain kind of brings me to who just on paper from a talent perspective have the best assets at maybe where the Bills are lacking this coming year. And there's still a lot to be decided because there's a lot that we don't know right now. Like, we don't know how impactful the young pass rushers of the Bills will be. We don't know how good their run defense will be with basically an entirely new defensive tackle room. We also don't know what version of Spencer Brown the Bills are going to get this year, whether it's the one that they had in his first four starts or if it was the one, you know, from the time that he came back from the reserve COVID list through the end of the playoffs, which was a far cry and a player that really struggled last year. So remains to be seen there how effective they'll be running the ball this year. There's a lot of different elements to what they could and might not be able to do. But I think the two areas of concern, at least for me, from a Bills perspective heading into the year, is how they're going to deal with yards after catch receivers, especially with Tre'Davious White coming back off a torn ACL, with Dane Jackson in the lineup, with a rookie and Kyer Elam in the lineup. That's an element to this season, this early season, that might give the Bills some problems. And then the other part of it is pass rushing. Deion Dawkins is solid on the left side, and he really turned in a great end of the season last year. But like I said, Spencer Brown, complete unknown at this point. There are reps where he looks like he can be great at what he does on the right side of the line. But there are also reps where he completely whiffs and a guy gets an instant pressure around him. So I think to like pass rushers and yards after catch guys that as the team that I think can really give the Bills the most trouble. And, you know, that probably leads me a little bit to the Bengals in that regard, if I'm being honest, just because, you know, Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, what they're able to do after the catch is pretty extraordinary, and Burrow having the accuracy to get it there. And I didn't even think I would say the Bengals as I was leading myself to that point, but they also have some good pass rushers that really brought it last year and that I think can give the Bills some problems. So that game late in the year on Monday Night Football in Cincinnati, that's going to be a great one between, you know, barring any injury to some important guys. But like I remember talking to our shared barber, Lindsay, over at Hamburg Barbershop, and she was like, yeah, we're trying to figure out where we're going to go. And they were thinking about Cincinnati. I'm like, absolutely. That's the trip, because, you know, the weather might not be great, but like in terms of game and experience and kind of an underrated city, I think that's a play there, because those are two teams that are going to be right on it this year. And where they are strongest is where the other team might be weakest this year. And so that's going to be a pretty cool matchup to see.
Yeah. It's a fun little city. I think I enjoy it.
Yeah, me too.
A manageable drive if you choose to go that way and have, you know, a big group go, and you got the primetime element. It's a matchup that we haven't seen, right? They didn't play last year. You know, with this version of the Bengals, with, you know, Joe Burrow evolving into what he has and that offense being what it is, that is one of the wild cards, I think, because you can see, you know, we've seen some of these matchups on paper, and maybe that's why I underestimate a team like the Dolphins, because I've seen what the Bills do to them time and time again, you know, and how they match up. And it's why the Chiefs are the default answer, because the Bills haven't really been able to crack the code when it matters with Kansas City. But a team like the Bengals is interesting, because that's one they still have to figure out. And I think when you mention what the Bills are, where they might be weak, the physicality element of what the Bengals bring is part of, I think, why they were able to make that run last year. And they got better on the offensive line, which was their biggest issue down the stretch. So they're an easy team to overlook for some reason, because they're not, you know, they didn't have as splashy an offseason as the Chargers or the Broncos, and they don't have Mahomes, but they've got some really good players on offense, and Joe Burrow looks like the real deal. So, you know, I think that's a team that probably should get a little bit more respect in this conversation. You know, the Bills are the presumed Super Bowl favorites, the popular top of the power rankings pick, and, you know, an AFC favorite. And while the Chiefs are always a threat, there's the team that went to the Super Bowl sitting right there. So we'll see how they handle, you know, those expectations. They got to play the underdog last year, and, you know, they won't sneak up quite as much this time around, but they still have all the talent to be right in the mix again. And, you know, that's, you know, an interesting element of the Bills season is the number of those teams that are sitting there on their schedule, right? Because of, you know, being a top finisher in your division, you start to get those marquee matchups, and it makes for an interesting collection of games, especially as they head down the stretch.
Oh yeah. And the Bengals discussion, like bringing up Spencer Brown, kind of brings me to another interesting element to the season. Not even just who the Bills are going to have to tackle to get ultimately to where they want to go, but some of these younger players that really need to discern themselves in the coming year that the Bills are kind of leaning on. And there's a handful of them this year. I mean, you go from the offensive side of the ball. I mentioned Spencer Brown, who's a big one, and they're counting on him to be a starter there. But they did bring in some, at least a minor insurance policy in David Quesenberry, who I think could start at right tackle for them if they needed him to, if Spencer Brown winds up struggling. And you have, I mean, even lump James Cook into the mix as a rookie running back, even though, you know, we're still remains to be seen what he'll be heading into the year. Gabriel Davis is another one who has never been the full year starter. And everyone remembers the Chiefs game from last year, which was incredible. And I think he's still an improving receiver. But in four of his six starts at the end of the year, and where he was playing at least, I think, 70% of playing time, he failed to get 50 yards in four of those six games. And the other one that wasn't the Chiefs crazy game, I think it was for like 80 yards or something like that. So and low catch numbers. So it's not as though you can just absolutely expect he's going to come in and be this incredible asset right from the get-go. There might be a bit more of a learning curve than maybe the fantasy football community wants there to be, because he's such a name right now. Everybody wants Gabriel Davis. And I've seen, like, you know, just tracking ADPs out there and watching his just continue to rise as the week kind of goes. But he does have the potential to be the best receiver that Diggs has been paired with in the starting lineup. From there, I mean, the Ryan Bates is another one that kind of has to step up after a small role. Then you have the defensive ends. You have a young player in Kyer Elam, Dane Jackson. There's a lot of variables here with young players that the Bills are depending on to make some sort of jump. So for you, which one of those, like that clump of first, second, third year guys that have yet to make that leap forward, which to you is kind of the one that you're most intrigued to see how their season goes coming up here?
Yeah, this is kind of the natural progression of a team when you get, you know, so much money having to be handed out to certain positions. You need some of these players to be better than their their cap number or better than what you're paying them. And I think Dane Jackson is going to have a lot on his plate potentially as Tre'Davious White, you know, works his way back from the ACL. And just because from a depth standpoint, he is, you know, the first line of defense against an injury. Mm-hmm. And that within a game, within a season, a multiple week absence, even once Tre'Davious White is back, that's a big deal. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, entering his second season should be able to handle more of a role. But the high draft choice, you know, spent on Kaiir Elam would suggest that he should be in the lineup early and that, you know, potentially be able to lock down one of those spots. But it's not a guarantee that he'll be, you know, perfect from the get-go. So Dane Jackson just strikes me as somebody that is going to have to handle, you know, some important snaps in some important moments. And, you know, with the experience that he has, that maybe they should be able to expect him to do that. I, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, I'm interested to see what Dawson Knox has for an encore here,
after last season.
And part of that is, yes, Gabriel Davis is a big deal. You know, like you said, he's been the guy that everybody's ready to watch after that playoff game. They're ready to see him break out in a bigger role, you know, with no Emmanuel Sanders, no John Brown. It's about, you know, that they didn't really feel the need to go out and get a veteran the way they did after they got rid of John Brown and went and got Emmanuel Sanders. Now they feel like Gabriel Davis is ready to be that guy. But the rest of the offense also, you know, there are targets to go around because Cole Beasley is gone, because Emmanuel Sanders is gone. And I think that makes the tight end position potentially a little bit more important. And Dawson Knox is, you know, showed flashes of being that next, you know, it's a weird position in the NFL where there's a handful of elite guys and then a lot of people in that middle class of the position. Mm-hmm. And Dawson Knox is, you know, has all of the talent to be a difference maker. And I think at times last year looked like that type of player and started to surprise me. It was an interesting element of not covering the team, but still, you know, sort of having my eye on them was when I did see them and when, you know, the Patriots played against them, expecting certain things of certain players and then having guys look a little bit different. And I thought Dawson Knox, as the year went on, between that first meeting and the last two meetings, it was like, okay, this is a different player. You know, things are finally starting to click for him. And I remember last offseason that and last training camp, that being a big question, you know, would things click? And so like, how high can this guy take it? You know, how good can he get? Because he might get paid that way pretty soon. So is he going to be that type of guy? He's got a great relationship with Josh Allen and has proven to be a source of big plays. So he feels like he could be an X factor on offense for this team. And I think, you know, there's going to be some question about how they sort things out targets wise, how, you know, they spread the ball around. And I think Knox has a chance to earn a pretty big piece of that.
Yeah, I like the Knox discussion because you mentioned the tiers of tight ends. And he's a lot, as of where he is now, he's a lot closer to that middle clumping than that elite tier that we're talking about. But what's interesting is those dudes are getting absolutely paid this offseason. Like, David Njoku has not had a good year since 2018. And he just got paid, I think it was like $56 million over 4 years. And that is just the surface numbers. But the guaranteed money, when you look at the contract, is huge. Like, he's guaranteed right at signing $17 million. But next year, after already having basically his entire base salary guaranteed for 2023, as long as he's on the roster 3 days into the league year, another $8 million guaranteed. So it's effectively $25 million guaranteed for this guy who has been buried on the depth chart for whatever reason, injured some of the time, but has this great athletic skill set. And he's getting $25 million guaranteed for at least a two-year deal, if not three or four, which would put him, if he gets the whole way through the contract, that's $56 million. Like, Dawson Knox is a good player, but can he be that borderline great one where they get elite production every so often throughout the season? That's what he really needs to prove this year. And what's interesting is I think he is the one of the upcoming free agents that the Bills have, and the big ones being Knox, Tremaine Edmonds, Jordan Poyer, and Devin Singletary. He is the one that I think fans almost universally are going, get that guy signed right now, because of how rare it is to find a good player at that position and how much the Bills as a franchise has struggled to find something great at the position. Like, right now, there's no pressure to perform if you're Dawson Knox because you're still on your rookie deal. You're good to go. Like, Charles Clay was one of the most prolific tight ends in Bills franchise history, and people couldn't stand him because of his contract more than anything. Like, he was productive. He put together three of the best receiving yard seasons in Bills franchise tight end history. Not saying a lot because no tight end has ever cracked 750 yards in the franchise, but the fact of the pressure of the contract was something in itself. So Knox is, if he can prove himself just a little bit, like maybe they handle this the same way as they did with Taron Johnson last year, where they ended up re-signing Taron Johnson to a multi-year extension in October. And after he had been just playing lights out at the beginning of the season, following a really strong end of his third season with the Ravens interception coming to top of mind that year. So maybe that's how they play that one. But I still would like to see a little bit more before doling out what it's going to take to keep him on board for the long term. And there are other factors involved. Like, he is a bro with Josh Allen, and that sort of relationship has proven to be really important to this coaching staff and keeping Josh Allen comfortable. But there is a difference between bringing back Matt Barkley to be probably your practice squad quarterback and signing Dawson Knox to what will likely be effectively like $15 million plus per season, or close to $15 million per season. That's a strong, strong line there that they're going to have to make a decision on. And I think it could be more complicated than maybe we're thinking. But yeah, he's someone that's definitely one that could find his way into a bigger role. And if he doesn't and he struggles at all this year, then I think that's a story in itself.
Yeah, I don't know if it fits the exact parameters of a young player stepping into a bigger role.
He's on his rookie deal.
He's still relatively young, and he's going to be in a bigger role, it feels like, or at least have the opportunity to be in a bigger role, where I think a big roadblock for him a lot of times early in his career was that there weren't a lot of footballs to go around, and there was a lot of talent at receiver and a lot of guys that needed to be fed the football. And now he's in that spot where he should be, probably the third option in the passing game, I would say.
Yeah.
And, potentially the second option, depending on, like you said, it's not a foregone conclusion that Gabriel Davis will be a dominant every week player. It looks like he has the potential to be, but looks like Dawson Knox has some of that potential within him. If I think I'm curious, because a big problem I saw with him early in his career was just lapses in concentration and, leaving a lot of plays on the field because of drops or preventable mistakes. And so as he's old, that's something that should be correctable, right? As you get older and you get more experience. And I also think being more involved might make it correctable, right? Mm-hmm. That might have been some of those lapses because it was like, well, I'm probably the fourth option on this route tree. Like, here I go. And, you know, not being able to get into as much of a rhythm as some other players are able to get into because they're getting thrown the ball all the time. So, I don't know, it'd be interesting to see, because not only do you want those young players entering year one or year two to jump into, or some guys entering year three to jump into those bigger roles and give you more bang for the buck, but this is also the point, final year of rookie contracts, where you really want guys to be veterans, to be legitimate contributors for you. And Dawson Knox is top of mind in that category from that class of players, because, you know, the relationship he has with Josh Allen, the decision they have to make on his contract, maybe that relationship with Josh Allen helps on the contract.
Oh, for sure. And,
you know, the way that he seems really comfortable in Buffalo could help in those discussions. You get a little bit of a discount if you get in early, but he also has to go out and earn some of it too. And the physical ability's all there, and it showed up more often last season than it had in years prior. So now how he builds on that, you know, could make this offense look a lot different if he becomes that type of player for them, because they could use it and it could open some things up and it could give Ken Dorsey some options.
Especially if they use more two tight end stuff, which I think they're going to this year with the addition of OJ Howard to the program, that would inevitably make Dawson Knox the second or third option that's going out for a route. Because obviously he would always be after Stephon Diggs, because Stephon Diggs is the true number one receiver, and he's the one you want to siphon the passing offense through because of how dynamic a player he is. But yeah, it ups Knox's odds to become a higher impact player. But then it just comes back to him and how he handles the success from last year, when he capably handled the failure, but, you know, maybe some inconsistency from his first two seasons. He handled that and turned in a great season. And you could tell when they missed him when he wasn't in the lineup, because the drop off from him to Tommy Sweeney was such a big one, especially in the red zone. That I think definitely built his case. But what he does, like you said, for an encore this year will be pretty telling. And then briefly, just the pass rushers in general. Rousseau, Basham, and Epenesa so often get clumped together, but I think there's like each player is on their own tier of what they're expected to do this season. I think Rousseau is of the, okay, he needs to start and be a 60 plus at, for what they hope, a 60%+ snap guy, and build on his season and become more impactful as a pass rusher. For Boogie Basham, I think for him is to develop into being that third pass rusher that they can move inside and outside if they want to. But the Bills have, since McDermott and Frazier have been here, have always had that third guy who's been able to mix in, to give them good reps and to, give them a little bit of a more of a pass rushing push than the fourth and fifth guys on the roster. So that would, I think that's his expectation. And I think for Epenesa, he just has to prove he can play consistently. Like, it was really jarring hearing Leslie Frazier go, yeah, we thought AJ was going to break out after the Dolphins game in week two, where Epenesa had a ton of pressures. His pressure percentage was crazy. And it looked like a different guy, but then the very next week and the weeks after that, he just kind of faded into the background, just wasn't effective. Part of that had to do with the matchup, because the Dolphins' offensive line and their offensive tackle situation was a train wreck that week. But, I mean, he should be able to do things a bit more consistently than he has been. And now it's just to the point where he's in his third year. He needs to prove he can be a consistent rotational guy that can get you the 30% of snaps and you don't have to worry about it. Or if he doesn't, then that opens the door for Shaq Lawson to get a little bit more time on the field. So those three guys, they have different layers, even though they're grouped together just because they're all first and second round picks over the last 2 years. But, you know, I think the one that I keep coming back to that I think could have a really surprising year is Boogie Basham. Not because he dropped some weight and got stronger, but like, I think he understands that what he did last year is not going to work this time around. I liked his college tape. I think he's someone that could be a little bit more versatile, and he's good at winning with that body type. I think what kind of happened for Epinesa a little bit, and I know I'm getting on a tangent here about pass rushers, but I think what kind of happened for Epinesa a little bit is he dropped so much weight that everything that he did at Iowa, winning with power, winning with strength, he had to basically reformat who he was because of how much weight he dropped, because he couldn't play like that as often as he won that way at Iowa. And so then he tried to win more with speed, and he's not really a speed guy. So it's just kind of, he's kind of caught in the middle right now. I think that's the way that it's unfolded for him through his first 2 years, and only 2.5 sacks through those first 2 years, and not a ton of pressures through those first two seasons. So it's a bit of a fork in the road year for AJ Epinesa, and for to a lesser degree, those other two guys.
Yeah, they've had trouble identifying pass rushing talent. It's been one of the problems, I think, you know, one of the few, especially on defense, that they've had. And mm-hmm. I think how they use Von Miller will be part of the equation in terms of what's left to go around for everybody else. If there's not as heavy a rotation, because Von Miller is a guy that usually eats up a lot of snaps historically over the course of his career. Not the way Sean McDermott has always done it, but he hasn't ever had Von Miller. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's probably, they'll probably find a middle ground there, but having that second option is a big deal, you know, with Jerry Hughes gone, and, you know, those are the guys that you drafted to be contributors, if not difference makers, frankly, you know, top two round draft picks, you hope are difference makers at some point, or at least in some games. And so, they don't need to bat 1,000 there. Batting, you know, 333 would do the trick. If you had one of those guys emerge, I think they'll be in good shape. But we'll see how it goes. I think, you know, Russo is probably, looks to me like the guy with the most potential to make it happen. Not that I've lost hope in AJ Epinesa, but just feels like the ceiling there, even if he does put it all together, isn't quite as high as the other two. But Russo particularly just has tons of potential to be that player, and maybe working mm-hmm. with Von Miller will help. But they definitely need those guys to grow up and become, you know, useful NFL players, because that is the biggest difference down the stretch of a season in the playoffs. To make these tough quarterbacks uncomfortable, you got to put that pressure on, and a lot of times it comes down to individuals taking over, and Von Miller's done it in his career quite a few times. So we'll see how that all shakes out. And I think, you know, all those guys don't have much in the way of excuses at this point. You've got one of the greatest pass rushers in the history of, you know, certainly in the modern era, you know, the last 20 years right there. He's more than willing to help. He's had you out to his camp. You know, at this point, you can't ask for much more than those guys have gotten, and they're going to get the mm-hmm. opportunity this year to put it together with, you know, meaningful snaps too.
Yeah, no doubt. So the Bills have plenty of young players to try and rely upon this year, and certainly those three pass rushers are a bit top of mind, especially with how Sean McDermott kind of described what he needed from those guys in their second and third seasons. Heading into this upcoming year without the presence of Hughes and, of course, Mario Addison from last year. All right, I think that's a good place to put a pin in it. The Bills are off until July 24th. We've got a little bit of a break here before things pick back up for them with the start of training camp on the 24th. And then, you know, I think they report to camp on the 23rd. It's my advice to you all, just like we were talking about in the early in the episode, recharge a little bit. Be excited about the season, of course, but like, you know, let it cool for a little bit. So that way when it really gets back and rearing to go, and I'm also talking to myself here to allow myself to recharge my batteries before the season starts, because covering a football team is a grind in itself, especially one that could go deep into February. But yeah, take this time, recharge the batteries a little bit, and enjoy the nice weather out there. I think that's where my biggest advice will lead to.
Yeah, it's one of the only times a year where you get the nice weather. So soak it in, unplug, and the Bills will be back on the field soon enough. And
they will.
People will have lots to get fired up about. So, definitely a good time to step away from anything that people are saying between now and training camp. Doesn't really matter anyway.
Yeah. So,
unless something happens, but. You know, this is the time of year where those things tend to happen, but fingers crossed for everyone's sake that's not the case. Nobody likes unexpected news in the middle of July.
Certainly not. While you are maybe taking some R&R away from the Bills discourse, I would encourage you to follow my main man, Matt Fairburn, here and to see what the Sabres will do heading into the draft on July 7th, and then free agency right after that. It's a good little, if you're not just a Bills fan and you're invested in all Buffalo sports, it's a good little time to see what unfolds from that perspective. So, Mr. Fairburn, good luck covering your first draft in free agency. I'm sure you're going to give the fans a pretty good look at what the Sabres are trying to do here.
Yeah, it should be fun. Looking forward to, you know, having something new. Should be a fun week up in Montreal here in a few weeks. And Sabres have a lot of resources at their disposal to, you know, keep this rebuild on track. So have some fun stuff in the works and look forward to getting to crank some of it out here.
You can see all of that, both mine and Matt's work over at theathletic.com, and you can subscribe by heading to theathletic.com/thebufferbeat. All right, for Matt Fairburn, I didn't really just say that. Matt Fairburn, how many times have I said your name in my life and not done that? For Matt Fairburn, my name is Joe Biscaglia. Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of the Buffalo Beat, and we will talk to you when the Bills reconvene for training camp in late July. See you then.